Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a source of powerful free resources to help you as a parent or grandparent get equipped to invest in the faith of the next generation. Our Next Gen website has been designed to help empower you to navigate tough issues with the young people in your life. At Next Gen, you'll find articles, entertainment reviews from a Christian perspective, parenting stories, helpful parenting guides, and even answers to the tough questions. All these resources are free as you engage on the front line of raising the next generation for Jesus. So why not register today at premierinsight.org/resources to receive free resources from NextGen. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
Well, hello and welcome to Matters of Life and Death. As always, I'm Tim Wyatt and I'm joined, as ever, by my dad, John Wyatt. Hi, John.
Hi. Good to be here.
Yeah, we're going to be picking up our conversation from last week about robots and rights. If you haven't listened to that episode, I do recommend you pause this and go back to it, as it will help this, what we're about to talk today, make a lot more sense. We're going to go on today to chat about some Christian responses and different ways different theologians have thought about this issue. And I guess at heart of it, we were discussing last week is how do we categorize robots? Imagine a future when robots have gained artificial intelligence, a form of consciousness, maybe even sentience. Do we see them as morally equivalent to human beings, or are they still a separate category?
Yeah, that's right. And this is more than just an abstract philosophical speculation, because there's very active discussion going on in many centres around the world about the regulation of future robots or autonomous intelligent agents, and in particular, whether some kind of bill of rights for robots should be developed. Can a robot be regarded as a person for legal purposes? And what are the implications for Christians? How should Christians think about these extraordinarily mind-boggling new questions?
Mm. And I guess the first thing to say is, obviously, you know, you go combing through the scriptures for a proof text about robots and you're going to come up empty. But there is, I suppose, a kind of instinctual, kind of maybe automatic response from, I think, a lot of Christian thinkers, which is that there is something fundamental about humans which is different from anything else in all of material creation, including anything that we create as human beings, such as robots. And that's about the image of God, and therefore, you know, case closed, robots are not in the image of God, and therefore they can't be people.
Yes, and you can understand, you know, that immediate response. But I think we need to think a bit more carefully and deeply about this. You know, what often happens as technology advances is that there's an initial attitude of repugnance, a kind of emotional, non-intellectual response. That sounds ridiculous. That's yuck, sometimes called the yuck factor. And it's possible for people just to respond at that kind of emotional level without thinking deeply about what are the issues that are involved. And so I do think there is a real value in trying to think more deeply about this. And one of the fascinating things, you know, you can see this in the history of thought time and time again, that as a new challenge arrives, a new way of thinking, which challenges orthodox Christian thinking, it actually represents an opportunity, because it forces us to think more deeply and more carefully about the truth which we found from the basic biblical foundations of Christianity. So I think there's a new opportunity for us here to think more deeply about what it means to be human.
And do you see that happening? Do you see theologians, church leaders, denominations kind of going back to this question that we might have thought was fairly settled about the nature of humanity and Christian theology. Do you see people kind of reopening that in response to the pressing issue of robotics?
Well, to be honest, it's still at a very, very early stage, this kind of discussion. I was given some money by the Temple Foundation in collaboration with the Faraday Institute in Cambridge in the UK to undertake a research project very much around these theological and philosophical issues. And so I spent a number of time approaching various heavyweight theologians and church leaders and asking them to collaborate in this project. And to be honest, I was quite surprised by some of them who were very dismissive and thought this was a complete waste of time and really not anything they wished to be involved with. And so I think there is a kind of reluctance for many serious theologians to get involved in some of these questions. And I'm not really understand where that reluctance comes from. But I suspect quite a lot of it is about the fact that so many church leaders and theologians come from a non-scientific background. You know, they come from the humanities and they've never been interested in science. They've never read any science fiction and they just find the whole thing rather distasteful and uninteresting.
You know, speaking as a humanities person myself, who dropped all my sciences as soon as I could after my GCSEs, I have to say, like, I actually have a bit more sympathy than it sounds like you do for church leaders in particular. It's an incredibly busy, stressful job working in that sort of ministry. And to say, you know, you need to be urgently inquiring into the ethics of a situation which does not exist and for all we know may not exist in their lifetimes. It's certainly not round the corner, is it? The emergence of AI and genuinely autonomous, rational, conscious machines. No matter what the kind of Silicon Valley boosters would have you believe, we're not close to creating kind of Asimov-style robots. I can understand why a church leader says, do you know what, that doesn't seem like on all the thousand things on my radar the most pressing issue to be doing some reading and thinking about.
Sure. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that every church leader needs to be really engaging with these issues at that kind of level. Although, you know, I do think that church leaders need to start thinking about technology. I mean, yes, it's true that, you know, advanced sentient robots are maybe many decades away. But, you know, so many church members have got smartphones that they talk to. They've got Alexa and Amazon Alexa and Google Home, you know, especially the young people, you know, may well have virtual companions and using AI continuously. And surely these issues are vitally important even for your average pastor who's trying to support a church community.
Well, let's go back to the theology then. We mentioned briefly the kind of what you might call the traditional orthodox view, the mainstream view, which is that because humans are made in the image of God and robots are not, that is the key kind of bright dividing line. But and that carves off humans as an entirely separate category from the rest of the entire universe. And therefore, no matter how sentient, conscious, autonomous a robot becomes, it can never be equivalent to a human being and therefore should never be granted the same kind of dignity, personhood, status or rights as a human being. Do you find that argument compelling?
Well, I think there is a great deal to be said for it. As you say, this is the orthodox position, which you can trace all the way back to the New Testament writers and also to the early church fathers who saw both in the way that God had created human beings in his own image, but particularly in the fact in the incarnation, the fact that humanity is invested with special significance by Jesus of Nazareth coming in the form of a human being, and the destiny and dignity of human beings is very much then tied up with the figure of Jesus Christ and this unique status that that is given to him. And I, for one, have been very much influenced by theologians who've emphasized that perspective. And I've been coming out of the project that I mentioned is a book called The Robot Will See You Now, published by SBCK in the UK, but it's available internationally. And two of the theologians who did agree to be involved were Stephen Williams and Robert Song, both eminent professors of theology. So Stephen Williams really defends what you could see as the orthodox position, and he places the emphasis particularly on the fact that human beings are essentially related to God. He says that humankind has been constituted by God to be in relationship with him, and that this is something that, however sophisticated an AI or robotic system is, it can never be essentially related to God in the same way. And he also emphasizes the importance of embodiment, that our humankind, the way that we're created, is to be embodied, and that the hope for the future of humanity is not in some kind of disembodied virtual state, but is with a resurrection body. And this differentiates us from a digital, disembodied kind of artificial intelligence. So he argues that the question we have to ask about robotics is how does it help us to thrive in our essentially human kind of being? And if robotics is going to some way interfere with this thriving, then we should resist it. If, on the other hand, it's helping us to thrive, to become more human, then we should welcome it.
And there does seem to be some real merit to that idea, because it grounds us and our status and identity not as kind of ourselves, not something that we self-actualize, that we kind of create our humanness from ourselves, but it says, no, it's a gift, it's received, it is a reflection of the only kind of true original force in the universe, which is God himself. Whereas, and that seems to me both kind of consonant with Christian theology and quite a kind of a good, humbling, safe place to stand when thinking about what sets us as apart as human beings.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I think this is a very important theme, isn't it? That in a secular, liberal understanding of what it means to be human, this idea of self-definition, of autonomy, that I am a unique experiment in living, I'm creating my own identity. These are very, very powerful ideas within the secular world. And in fact, many people would regard this Christian idea that our identity is given us by God as being somehow demeaning, isn't it? I mean, I should be able to create my own identity, to decide whoever I am.
And that's actually the essence of all sin, is ultimately a desire to remove God from the throne and place ourselves upon it. What key way how that works itself out, as you say, is about saying I'm going to refuse to allow myself to be bordered and structured and boundaried and hemmed in by another, by God, and I'm instead going to say, no, I'm in charge, I can decide, I can rule, I can reign, I can determine what I am, who I am, what is right, what I can do.
Yeah, and there's a line in a Christian song which says, I am who you say I am. And I often think that is extraordinarily deep and profound, you know, that ultimately it's God who defines who I am, both generically as a human being and uniquely as a unique person. And I want to be more of the person who God says I am.
And it's something a robot cannot say, because a robot says, I am who I've been programmed to be by a human, another part of created order. I am made in the image, not of God, but made in some sense in the image of the software designer or the robotics company that created me.
Yes, I mean, that's fundamentally right. And of course, again, from a Christian theological point of view, made in a fallen image. I mean, made by fallen human beings, contaminated by evil, and therefore the product of our hands is also contaminated by evil. I think an AI coder would want to come back and say, yeah, but sophisticated autonomous machines are not deterministic in that sense, you know, in that the software is designed to explore possibilities and come up with novel solutions. And you know, there are many examples where AI is coming up with genuinely novel solutions, which no one else has ever, no human being has ever worked out before. So I think you can't say that the AI is just doing what it's programmed to do, but nonetheless it is constrained by the way it's been created by a limited and fallen human being.
You're listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.
So that's kind of William's position. You said the other theologian you had in the book was Robert Song. Does he argue a different line?
Yes, Robert Song, again, very eminent professor of theology in Durham. And he, I mean, there are lots of similarities. I don't want to overstate the differences, but there are some interesting and subtle differences between Robert Song's position and that of Stephen Williams. And what Robert Song comments on is the fact that it seems that as the robotics and artificial intelligence advances, something that we thought was uniquely human suddenly turns out, oh no, robots can do that as well. You know, robots can compose music, robots can write novels, robots can drive cars, etc., etc. And he said it's almost like the citadel of human uniqueness is under constant attack, and a little bit gets lopped off each time. And he says the danger is that Christians want to say, oh yes, but there's still something unique about human beings, and that is being constantly threatened by advances in the science. And he says that we shouldn't worry about AI and robots doing more and more, or we shouldn't worry about the upgrading of robots. What we should worry about is the downgrading of human beings. And he says it can be a bit like the God of the Gaps, that historically in science, whenever there was a tendency that whenever science couldn't explain something, the Christians would say, oh, well, that must be God. But understandably, as science advances, that seems that God does less and less. And Robert Song is saying it could be the same danger, that as the technology advances, what's special about humanity becomes less and less.
So in this framing, the kind of definition of humanity is not grounded on the imago Dei, but is instead grounded on our capacities, whether that's our consciousness, our sentience, our creativity, our rationality, our spirituality. It's about capacities rather than identity.
Well, what Robert Song would say is that the essential uniqueness of human beings is in our calling. And he would relate this to the imago Dei, but he would say that the way we image God, or the way we reflect God in the creation, is primarily by our calling to represent God to the whole of nature through the creation mandates to subdue the earth and to multiply and to fill it and to bring, to cultivate. In the image of the garden, that human beings are the cultivators, bringing out the richness of creation. He says that's our unique calling, and that nothing can threaten that, however advanced the robots become, even if they appear to take on consciousness and other forms of human functioning. They can't threaten our unique human calling.
And so in this sense, he's fairly relaxed about the potential advent of autonomous conscious machines, because he would see them simply as another example of humans cultivating created order. You know, we've taken these raw materials of metal and silicon and plastic and electricity, and we've created something entirely new. And it might be so new that it actually has a kind of consciousness, a sentience, a life. But that doesn't matter, because no matter how alive it is, it hasn't got the same calling that we have.
Yes, exactly. So whereas Stephen Williams' view is would lead to a greater degree of caution, about wanting to defend human uniqueness, and therefore I think would tend to resist the idea that a robot could be a person. I think Robert Song's view is more positive towards technology in general, prepared to see how God may allow us to bring these new entities into existence, and that we should welcome them, not be threatened by them.
But I suppose, does Robert Song actually address the kind of question we started with, which is, should robots have rights and responsibilities of personhood? So he might say, I mean, I guess the question is, do our rights and dignities as human beings come from our calling, or in which case we shouldn't give them to robots? Or is he saying, actually, it's fine to give robots the rights and responsibilities of personhood because the calling aspect of our humanity remains distinct, but there's no reason why we should restrict the status and dignity of personhood only to those who have that special calling from God?
So he doesn't explicitly address the issue of robot rights in the chapter in which he's written in the book I and Stephen Williams edited. But these are active areas of discussion, which we, as a group of multidisciplinary group, we've discussed amongst ourselves. And I think there isn't a clear answer. There are more issues to discuss here. But I just want to raise a third Christian response, and that is the response that Michael Rice has put forward. And he argues that the human beings are fully physical, that there is no mystical, immaterial part of being human. And yet what emerges out of our central nervous system are these phenomena of consciousness, of rationality, and our ability to relate to other people and to relate to God. These are, he describes them as emergent properties coming out of the central nervous system, out of the wiring of our brains and so on. And since that has happened to human beings, he argues there's no fundamental reason why that can't happen within the circuitry of an artificial intelligence. And therefore he says that we should be prepared for the fact that at some point these machines are likely to become sentient, to become conscious, and at that point we should give them the privilege of personhood. They should be regarded as robotic persons and maybe of equal status to human beings.
Do you think this is kind of outside the bounds of kind of Christian orthodoxy when it comes to the kind of physicalism of it, or do you think that's actually you can hold that view while still kind of holding on to fundamental kind of Christian convictions about the Imago Dei and that kind of thing?
Well, there certainly are a group of Christian scientists who are adopting this fundamental view about what it means to be human. I would say they represent a minority amongst philosophers, Christian philosophers and scientists, but they are definitely a significant group, and they argue that human beings, it is our physical nature that is at the heart, and that the aspects that we think of like consciousness and free will and our ability to relate to God, these are emergent properties. So they would fundamentally be would say that there is nothing but matter, that what constitutes human beings is a materialistic reality. Now, the alternative view, the philosophical view, which is probably more common amongst Christian philosophers, would be some kind of dualism, sometimes called a substance dualism. In other words, that there are two quite distinct aspects to being a human being. There is the physical component of which our bodies are made, but then there is this other component, a completely immaterial, non-physical aspect, which might be called soul or spirit, and that the human being is a combination of these two kinds of reality.
Yeah, just reflecting on how that fits in with the kind of Judeo-Christian framework in scripture, I guess you have that kind of theme that runs through both Old and New Testaments of like the breath of God. In Hebrew, that's ruach, which can be translated, I think, as wind, breath, or as kind of spirit and soul. And there's a kind of fundamental ambiguity there about, you know, what that is. But it is a clear idea that humans were made out of the dust and then God breathed into them. And it's the combination of the breath of God and the kind of dust of the earth that creates humans. So I can see there is a kind of consonance there running at least through Old and New Testament.
Yes, I think what most biblical theologians would want to emphasize is that the biblical, particularly the Old Testament Hebraic understanding of humanity, is that we are a unity, you know, that there is a fundamental unity about being human, but we have many different aspects. We have material aspects, we have physical being. I mean, the Hebrew often talks about the heart and about the kidneys, about the flesh, about the nefesh, which is some kind of the soul, and there is this, and the ruach, as you said, and the human being is a complex unity of many different aspects, some of them physical, some of them immaterial. And what is fascinating, you know, is that the advent of robotics and artificial intelligence means that these kind of discussions become more than just interesting theological, philosophical speculation, because all of a sudden it really matters how we understand what it means to be human from a biblical Christian point of view is going to make a huge difference to how we respond to advancing robotics and AI.
I mean, one thing that strikes me, if we take that third position, the kind of more optimistic, the Rice position, that potentially consciousness and personhood could emerge from future kind of complex autonomous robots, then we have to think about how we relate to them spiritually. You know, are they capable of having a relationship with God? You know, do they need to be evangelized and ultimately saved like we do? I guess it raises some interesting novel questions that maybe similar to what would happen if we discovered kind of sentient alien life. And we kind of think, how do we fit that into our anthropology as Christians?
No, that's exactly right. And it's a very interesting and instructive parallel to think through, you know, as thought experiment. So if NASA announced, you know, next week that they'd established contact with an intelligent species on a distant planet in another planetary system, how would we think about these beings theologically? Would we think that these are beings that are related to God and that we should preach the gospel to them? How should we respond to them? And in the same way that it is analogous with an artificial intelligent species on Earth, because we would have the same difficulties. We wouldn't really know what it felt like to be that alien species any more than we know what it feels like to be a computer. But we would assume that there was something it did, there was some kind of subjective awareness. And so we reach out to them, I think, with humility, with compassion, with love, and with respect. And so that's a very interesting thought experiment, which you know, we have to engage with, we have to think about.
We're kind of coming to the end of our time, but just before we leave, I want to really press you. You're much more of an expert on this than I am. I'm very kind of new to this idea, but which of those three views, if any, that we discussed earlier, do you find most compelling yourself? Do you see you kind of landing in the kind of agnostic position? We're not really sure, or do you lean towards the more traditional, the more optimistic view?
I lean towards the orthodox position that Stephen Williams has espoused. In other words, it seems to me, if we take the whole way that Christians have been thinking for 2,000 years about the uniqueness of human beings, I think we want a very strong reason for throwing that away. My default position would be that we should protect the uniqueness of human beings, and we should be concerned about the possibility of a kind of deceitfulness of a counterfeit personhood, which could be very manipulative and misleading, and this sort of blurring between what it means to be human and what it means to be a machine. But I suppose I would have to say that I wouldn't want to absolutely rule out the possibility that at some stage there might be a machine that God, in his surprising grace, gives the gift of personhood to. I don't think I have any right to say, no, God would never do that. It would be completely outside his purposes. I mean, what right have I to say what God's plans and purposes are? And it may be, it's possible that at some stage in the future, it becomes apparent that God is giving the gift of personhood to some new advanced kind of machinery.
Hmm. What a world that would be. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? But I suppose that's what we have those sci-fi writers to kind of dream big dreams and sketch out alternative futures for us to try and think these things through. And just lastly, then, we mentioned at the beginning that your kind of frustrations at the fact that not many kind of theologians and thinkers are delving into this. Would you be encouraging kind of church leaders and theologians to kind of push this issue up the agenda, up the priority list of future study?
Well, I don't want to overstate it. And I think that for the average, church leader, the most important issues are the issues I mentioned before, things like smartphones and use of the internet and so on. But I would hope that the theologians and Christian philosophers would be more prepared to engage with some of these issues, because I do see them as important, not least because they tell us more about what it means to be human.
Hmm. Great. All right. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thanks as ever, John. And thank you to everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed this kind of pair of episodes about robots and rights. Robots and AI, as we've discussed, is something that John's been working and researching on for a few years. So it's definitely a topic we're hoping to come back to in the future. If you want to go find out more about this issue, the best place to go would be to the book that he and Stephen Williams co-edited last year, The Robot Will See You Now. We'll pop a link to how you can get hold of that in the description of this podcast. But as ever, there's also loads of other material on technology and AI and robotics on John's website. That's John Wyatt, WYATT.com. Anything else to say there, John, about stuff coming up in the future?
No, well, I'll be aiming to put up some more articles on my website dealing with some of these issues, and always very interested to hear comments and feedback. This is very much a discussion we need to be holding amongst ourselves. So thanks so much for those who have responded, and looking forward to the conversation in the future.
Mm. As ever, if you'd like to get in touch with us, it's really easy. You just can send an email to molad, M-O-L-A-D, at premier.org.uk. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you next week.
You've been listening to Matters of Life and Death, a podcast from Premier Unbelievable.